The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight on Veritas, our special guest is no stranger to the extraordinary. Ronald Kinsella, an accomplished author, artist, and illustrator, has dedicated his life to exploring mysteries most fear to confront. With vivid illustrations and thought-provoking narratives, Ronald has carved a unique path in the world of paranormal and UFO literature, boldly questioning what lies behind the veil of reality. His latest book, Illusions, Smoke and Mirrors of the UFO, ET and Paranormal Enigma, asks unsettling questions. Are UFO sightings, alien encounters, and cryptid reports merely random brushes with the unknown? Or could they be the deliberate acts of a cunning, manipulative force, a force that uses deception as its greatest weapon? Ronald suggests that what we believe to be supernatural or extraterrestrial might, in fact, be something far darker, exploiting our perceptions and curiosity for purposes we can scarcely fathom. But Ronald isn't just an observer. He's lived through his own chilling encounters. As co-host of the Twin Souls Paranormal Radio Show, alongside his identical twin, Philip Kinsella, a veteran of this program, Ronald draws on personal experience to explore these phenomena with unparalleled depth. Their work challenges audiences to ask the questions most won't. Are we truly alone in the cosmos? Or is humanity playing a pawn's role in a cosmic game of illusion? Tonight, Ronald will guide us beyond the surface of the unknown. What truths lurk behind the comforting stories of benevolent visitors and mystical creatures? Could the reality be more deceptive and more dangerous than we dare to believe? Ronald Kinsella is coming up next. Welcome to the Veritas Project. I'm your host, Mel Hostelrich. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. If you're looking to get in touch with me, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website. Your thoughts and ideas are always appreciated. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's program. The website is thekinsellatwins.com, and directly from south of London, Bedfordshire, I would like to welcome Ronald Kinsella. Hello, Ronald, and welcome to Veritas. How are you?
Hello, Mel. I'm very well, thank you, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
Oh, my pleasure, and for the record, this is the first time in almost 17 years where I'm interviewing an identical twin. So for those who are looking at the camera here, and you probably, you know, look at the face and think, wait a second, I've seen him before. Well, we've interviewed his brother, Philip, twice. And if you are as nice and as eloquent as your brother, I'm looking forward to it.
I hope I am. I think I am. Yes, Mel, yeah.
So let's begin with your story before we dive into your new book, because, you know, Philip has an interesting story and I know that you have an interesting one too. Why don't we begin with your background?
Yes, well, I'm, as you know, and your wonderful audience, I'm an identical twin brother. I'm 55 years old. I love science fiction. And now that goes against you with this particular subject, goes against you. But I love science fiction, always has done. And I'm an artist. I got an A-level in art, and I've been drawing for God knows since I was a child. I've moved to digital now, so digital is much more cleaner, but it took me 12 years to grasp. So I love doing creature effects, science fiction, things like that, you know, things that cannot be compared to anything. That's how you get away with it. You know, I do monsters and there's no such thing as them. But if I did a spaceship that we have, like the shuttlecraft, there would be inconsistencies and they will pick them out. So I get away with it for being inconsistent. I'm also a writer. I've written a number of science fiction books. As I said, I love science fiction. And they border more on the alien and demonic aspects. So in a nutshell, I'm very artistic and very thoughtful as well. I like to think about things.
And by the way, I love science fiction. Don't get me wrong. Usually we don't talk fiction here, but I'm an avid science fiction reader. I love The X-Files. And obviously for people like us who like science fiction, it's not that we're confusing things, but the question is, your work intertwines writing and illustration. I mean, it's a fusion of logic and creativity. How do these dual talents shape your approach to examining the unknown? Because you do it in a professional manner.
Mm. But it has helped because the aliens reported by people, certainly the Greys, the most popular humanoid documented in reports, I can illustrate them. The trouble is when I do illustrate them, and the reptilians as well, that they're the main focal point of my art, along with the saucers, the saucer smash of 1947, the Roswell case, which I believe happened. I do believe that was a real event. They have helped me. This artistic kind of drive has pushed me in that kind of direction. So it actually has been quite handy. The only trouble is when I actually illustrate the Greys, more than not from descriptions given to me by the people who've seen them, they say that's not what they look like. And so you've got a varied amount of different kind of reports of them. So, but I get by just using artistic license.
So when it comes to reptilians, so many people have different stories of reptilians. Some people have told me that they're positive, some that are negative. Where do you stand?
Well, that could be said about the Greys as well.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not too sure. The positive, personally, and not contesting anyone's own opinion, because we're all entitled to them. You know, the people who report the positive, that's fair enough. We have no proof. But more than not, it does tend to border along the negative with them, with me, certainly from what I've heard reported or documented about them. Researching a little bit of the reptilians is amazing, isn't it? When you actually dig, you find a lot of stories. There's another number of interesting stories about the reptilians, one of which involved a mogul, a hotel mogul, a tycoon. And that fascinated me. Because that was bordering on demonic. In fact, every aspect of them I have researched is negative.
So when you say negative, what exactly do they do? And these beings, some people say, you know, they're not extraterrestrial. They've been here before the dawn of humans.
Yeah, well, that might be true. I mean, you see, the thing, before we move on to that, what interested me is, I'm talking about the reptilians and the Greys, the enormous variations we had in the past. They didn't appear to be set in stone. I'll explain the reasons as to why, because working on these books, these few books I've done, I tended to find that the reports of the aliens or alleged encounters with them, they'd vary enormously. You had like goblins. You had the fair-haired, beautiful Nordics type. You have even Vulcans and Jellymen. And looking further into it, I found that the Greys, let's take them for an example, they became popular in the late 80s. And that is when Whitley Strieber's book Communion was published. The image on that cover kind of invoked some sort of recognition or some familiarity. There was something about them which people acknowledged. And then thereafter, and I know this because I was around then, thereafter, they became popular. You see, UFO magazines at the time, completely printing story after story about these now known Greys. We call them Greys. We've given them a name, define them as the Greys. But in the past, certainly they weren't set in stone. I know that they were reported by Kathleen Marden's auntie and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, in 1961. I think they had the abduction. Was it Mount Rainier or somewhere there?
I believe, yeah, Mount Rainier, yeah. Right.
So that's right, the lovely, she's a lovely lady, absolutely love her to bits.
She is.
They were Greys. albeit not exactly how these new ones look, but they certainly adopted the characteristics and the look of what we call now the Greys. And then they change again. You see, the actual reports from people across the world vary. I mean, in Russia, we had giants, giant men, and you have fairies, and you have, as I said, the Kelly, Kentucky incident. I think that was, is that 1955, with the homestead of the family who actually used rifles to battle these invading critters. They were like goblins and they floated. So they changed and changed, but it was Whitney Strieber's book that set it more or less in stone. It wasn't Close Encounters, the wonderful film that Steven Spielberg produced, the wonderful, marvelous, wonderful man. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. They were very nice and kind, the Greys. They adopted a more kind of acceptable approach to what we conceive to be these aliens, you know. But even that died out. Even after that, the reports varied again until we get people coming out with their stories. And more than not, after the 80s, they were set in stone, and more than not, they're Greys. It's interesting, as it's fascinating. So my question is, why are we seeing perhaps dozens, maybe even under 100 different kind of reported species, or the looks of them? This got me thinking about the UFO phenomenon. We'll delve into that a little bit more, because what I suggest in the second book, the newest one, Illusions, may border on something a little bit more fantastical than extraterrestrials.
Let's go back here for a moment, because you mentioned Whitley Strieber's Communion book. And you're right. This is when the first time I ever saw any publisher or experiencer talking about the negative aspects of it, because mainstream saw in 1978 with the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and everybody's thinking, oh, take me with you. I mean, even at the end, you probably have heard of the, what is the name, SERPO, Project SERPO. Have you heard of that many years ago? And some people speculate that it was an exchange between the Greys and the United States. And this is what we see at the end of Close Encounters. If you look at that movie or watch that movie again, at the end, the Greys are coming and some of ours are leaving. So that's a fascinating part. But you had a story, you had a pivotal personal experience from 1989. Can you explain?
Yes, mine was 1982. And don't worry, Mel, because we're twins, Philip and I. It's like Philip's was 1989. Mine was 1982.
Oh, there you go.
That's fine. It's all right. My grandfather used to call me Philip all the time, so don't worry about it. My grandfather could never call me Ronald. Very rarely it was Philip. So don't worry. Being twins, it does that. So that's quite acceptable. It was 1982. A number of things happened. The first one was when we were staying with our grandparents in Feltham, Tashbrook Road. That's on the outskirts of London. It's Hounslow, Reacham. And we used to stay there on holiday with them every summer. And it was wonderful. A quite large house, three-story house. Loved it there. Spoiled bottlers, grandmas spoil their grandchildren to bits. You love your grandparents. And it was one day, one sunny day. I can't remember when it was, what actual day it was, what date it was. Being 13 years old, I didn't keep a diary. I was quite lazy at school, and I admit that. I didn't know what I wanted to be, so I was quite thrown by what happened. What it was, I can't remember if it was lunchtime, or it must have been the afternoon, sometime in the afternoon. We're out the back in the garden. They got a long lawn, so it's fenced off at the back. And this silver orb approached us. This is 1982. And the first impression was that it was a balloon. They're quite common even then, silver balloons, but it wasn't. This was a sphere. As it drew closer, it had a solidity about it. It wasn't bouncy or, you know, it was direct. It came straight over and then hovered over Grandma's head. Now, as to the height of it, it was level with the conventional second bedroom window of a house. So that's how high it was. And it was the size of a football. And it was silver, completely silver. It didn't make any noise. It came over in a controlled manner, then just hung over a head. Well, we were gobsmacked. And I had a good look at this thing. And looking up at it, the first impression I got that we were being watched. that it was some kind of camera, an electronic eye. Now, I have to say that with a smile, with electronic eye, because someone actually sarcastically asked if it had eyelashes. Yes, I've had that. But we observed it. There was no cord. There was no knot. It was perfect. And it looked heavy, as if it was made of titanium. Now, I wouldn't have known what that was at the time, being 13 years old and ignorant of things. But it would appear that it was some type of good metal or alloy, silver. It appeared soiled only due to the reflection of the world about it. And it just hung there. I don't know how long for, perhaps a minute or two. But I felt it was watching us. I didn't feel any fear. Just, I think you're just stunned, you know. This is technology, albeit technology which we didn't have at the time. We couldn't possibly have created anti-gravity mechanisms. Apparently, we still can't do it today, allegedly. Anyway, this thing then went straight up. So it went straight up, and then it stopped just short of the peak of the roof. And then it went over it. We ran in, Philip and I. An interesting thing before I proceed with this, our grandmother, when we pointed at this thing, we said, "Grandma, look, look." And she said, "Oh, look, the fairies have come to take a closer look." Now, that's very odd. The fairies have come to take a closer look. Well, I damn well knew that was nothing to do with fairies. Absolutely knew that was nothing to do with the fairy folk. This is technology. So we raced in because at the opposite end, there's a little stream where they lived, right by a little stream with a little bridge. So we raced into the kitchen window, or was it their bedroom? You see, I think it was their bedroom we raced into, upstairs. You see, even now, thinking about this, I'm a little bit thrown to memory, but I will be honest with you and tell you straight. I think it was the bedroom window, the bed that we went up to the bedroom window. We looked out, and I could see it. It was zipping along in a straight line, and it just went, just zoomed off. That was it. That was the whole thing. It had gone. It vanished. And even then, you didn't talk about it to anyone because people would automatically assume it's a balloon. The most common form of, you know, thing is a balloon. It's a balloon. You saw a balloon. This wasn't a balloon. I've had people after this ask me if everything went dead or silent. I can't remember. I can't remember that at all. So this is the first case, or something happened before that, but that's rather, how can I put it, too ethereal. But I have published it in the book. You know, being four and seeing something, you question your own sanity, your own eyes at four, how to gauge these six, you know. And this did happen. This was the silver orb that we saw, the sphere, in 1982. And it just went off. And of course, it's strangely, we never said anything much more about it. Isn't that weird, don't you think?
Well, yes. And also, a lot of people consider Grace to be insectoid. You call it the bug at Bignell, is that right?
That's right, the bug at Bignell house. Yes, the bug at Bignell, the chapter is called. That's right, it was like a praying mantis thing, but I couldn't even then. You see, this is what memory does to you. And people will say, oh, it's an inconsistency, you're lying. It's not. This is based on truth. I don't color things or try and make them fit. I'm just honest. We were, I think, did I say I was four or something? It was 1972 or three. 72 or 73, we were there. And that preceded this, because in that time, Philip and I had seen this thing. I'll tell you about that first. When we were toddlers, I was drawn to breaking things open. Look, you're inquisitive. You're a child.
Yes, like me.
And yeah, and I was drawn to these reeds. I don't know what part of garden it was. Bignell House is off road. It belongs to these millionaires. I believe the owner was an eye surgeon, top eye surgeon. And we lived on the property in a huge cottage. And we were allowed to, you know, run around. There's no one there. We were quite safe. It's, as I said, it's gated property. It's off road. It's way off road. So there's no one there. And we were just looking at these reeds, and I broke one open, and I noticed it was like polystyrene. now.
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.